Next up, we have Paul Jones. Paul has been a mentor to me because I tend to be rather illiterate when it comes to formal concepts of poetry. I have an idea of what they are. I don't know what they're called often, and there are a lot of poets and a lot of poetry that I'm not familiar with. Just the other day, he was reading some Welsh poetry from the 14th century. Paul has very eclectic tastes, and Paul runs iBiblio, which is, I think, the world's first and largest digital library. It's out of UNC, and it also has the largest collection of open source software. And so anyway, I would like to have you all give a warm welcome to Paul Jones. Paul Jones.
Thanks. It's good to be here, and I'll do a few poems here that have been out of a few places. So the first, I'd like to do a poem for George here, since he's here, and that I wrote last year for the Poets Against the War. I noticed that a lot of you guys are celebrating Pentecost because you're wearing red, and Sunday is a good time to do that, but this particular poem was written for Lent, 2003. Standing in line in Starbucks behind a skinny latte and an Americano, I'm uncertain and afraid. Clever ironies cannot change our luck. We're chased by ghosts from a bad decade, a time I felt free of not long ago, a time that brings a smell of death, and an anger that slips between lovers as they vanish from each other like bombs in a nighttime raid. Must we suffer it all anew, the cold romantic lie that sends our children to die and kills others' children too? Is there a torch to see us through such a night as this, full of ghoulish shadows whose howls we've heard before and their horrible slow hiss that says we must have war? We have Rumsfeld and Cheney dressed in conservative dark, become older and more stark, in a dance that would make Mad Nijinsky seem sane and all-loving like a flame. Not to stop here and call names. Enough as that is done by those who conspire to other ends, but to say we knew and know these men and are ashamed to be fooled again. We are entering Lent. The cure for negation and despair is I repent and repair from the discouragement and dismay. An affirming flicker stays and brightens as I pray that not all hope is spent. Lent, though somber, leads to spring's flare, the rising up of beauty everywhere. Standing in line in Starbucks, I order a depth charge, espresso shot in the dark, and pray for change from this more than unease that has gone to my bones. Son, I know I often tease, but believe me when I say we have hope and are not alone when I wish you love and peace. The next poem has to do with a little bit of confused history. It's okay to confuse history, I think, somewhat. And sometimes it's not. We all do historical revision, so I'll speak to that in a moment. But Randall had this beautiful vision of 1954. This is the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. And this poem, as it turns out, by some confusion, was published in the 49th year of the anniversary. Brown versus Education really had a big impact on lives because beyond changing the way schools work, it also changed the way other parts of our lives work. But there was also another significant change in North Carolina. The first modern shopping mall was opened in Charlotte, North Carolina, on land that was bought from Billy Graham's father. So this is a concurrence of those two events. called Dividing Waters, and it takes place in 1954. Signs divided the waters when all the creeks were rerouted around the evangelist father's field, and crops withered as the shopping center sprouted and red hills of clay mounted in red dust and oily mist. Even their hair was crimson, the men at break, the setting sun. Their hard work clinging to them made them all seem one red race. But too soon they were replaced, as if by some magic whim, by clean, careful, concrete men. What was to come next was grand. A new JCPenney store with tiles that set departments apart like pools of rain that captured only one tint. The boys' section was lime green, the toys brown, the sports blue, and more. My grandmother took me in. I thought I was about four, and the grand man himself held the door as in we poured to gawk at the full shelves, wonderfully uniformed bins, and the tall, tight-lipped women. Thirsty from all this outpour, I looked for water fountains and found two flanking a door, a shiny metal marked white, and a white one called colored, new but with a dripping drain. Still, the colored one seemed right. I stepped up for a cold sip, one hand bravely on the knob, thinking I'd made the slip. With a rough yank, I was robbed of my try for those colors and shoved over to the other by my silent grandmother. But there the water ran red. My lips looked like they bled. A blood common to all kids. And the drips draining on the tiles ran into the new young style section like biblical curses. I drank deep and almost burst. And another irony, this poem was published in the News and Observer 1 year off, 1 year too early, and then it vanished from their website, but reappeared, copied on a site in South Africa. So Google giveth and taketh away. And I'm happy that it found a home in South Africa. It turns out, I guess, they don't know they had JCPenney's. The next is a spring poem about tomatoes. Call this an apple, nightshade's cousin, clearly labial as the knife slips in, piercing thin skin. Working from below, change it to disc, each ready to kiss, fresh, easy to know, juice, seed, flesh, ripe, round, and red. Let us admire them as we toss them on their bed. Seasoned, not tired, sun's glow never lost, lettuce wreath, soft green underneath, tomato above, let us call this love. I think most poems are about analogy or confusion, and I'm not sure often which is which. This is a poem about a household appliance and a household pet, called "And They're So Easy to Clean." Some things belong together, like the cat and the blender. There is a certain affinity between them. Is it because they sound so much alike when they are happy? Could it be because one fits so well inside the other? Sometimes I believe it's because of the way they both drip milk. Not quite enough to be called sloppy, but you still have to mop up after them. If the cat's tail ended in a plug, or the blender were covered with fur, you couldn't tell them apart. The blender is a good place to store the cat when you go on a short trip. I use a transparent blender because the cat does not like the dark, even when it is in the blender. When the cat is loud and you need to sleep, set the dial to puree, and the cat will soon be pacified. Father's Day is coming up, so I thought I'd do a couple of Father's Day poems, one more serious or more than the other. My father used to have little things that he would tell me that would make me behave, and this starts with one of those lines. Be still, or I'll twist off your arm and beat you with the bloody end. Okay. What else is there to say? Be still, or I'll twist off your arm and beat you with the bloody end. Comic, nearly. The red spewing in every direction, raw tendons, pale bit of bone. I painlessly imagined my eyes gone from round to X's, a galaxy of shooting stars and cuckoos instead of scars. He was not a man of excesses. I know he meant no harm as he talked the idle talk of men. Still, the idea of my own limb swinging down as a fleshy club became as much a part of me as part of how I think of him. Well, comedy and tragedy aren't that far apart. Probably between action and belief. The next poem is a little different than those, and it actually is going to be, this is going to show up in the News and Observer also, largely because they pay me, and they have great distribution, which is very nice, and they print in large type so I can read it. So three big advantages for submitting there. This one is called Birds and Fishes. Because the world is willing to forget what has crossed it, the cold sea calls back salmon. Rocks glisten with their trying to reach the pot-bellied moon. We hear the tune of what will come, the song humming near us yet. The trees are empty save one bird, its head bare and raw as meat, its dark wings held shoulder high. Cold talk forged of cold winds would shield us, keep us behind the brush jumble of our blind while we watched the vulture feed. Father, see the waters fold as the stream unbraids, unwinds, having had its fill of loss. Like a sail windblown to full, this stream is set for the coast where salmon leap and leave us. We will never be their kind. Birds and fishes came into the world before Eden, before death. So we pity the monsters caught in the current swirl, water or air. They dance stairs over rapids, rushes, and stirs. Action is their name for faith. Our faith comes in reflection, the clear mirrors of new ice freezing all but the most swift. The slowest held as if stunned, as if their rest were a gift. The faster leap high, as if they could escape the cold's malice. What is here is without song, for them, from them. No vulture celebrates the salmon feast, nor pauses to think it wrong. What is offered and what pleases draws the river to the sea. What prayer could be more pure? Our prayers start singing slow, water seeping through the marsh, the low rumble of the soil, settling in new furrows, ice bridging the current's coil. All that seemed impossible sings as winter winds turn harsh. Okay. Okay, we'll do one more. This one's called Heart, and is less formal. I don't know if, for people who are listening, there are some formal tricks going on here and some patterns that I use and some influences going on, and particularly Dafydd ap Gwilym, who's a 14th century Welsh poet that Patrick mentioned earlier, probably one of the best poets to live and the most complex use of language and rhyme and alliteration and assonance and anaphora, whatever he could pull, he would do it. He had the advantage of living at a time when the bards had fallen and they couldn't make a living, and so he had to write all kinds of poems, mostly about trying to meet women he couldn't catch up with or that wouldn't have anything to do with him or thought he was too old, things that could resonate. Daffydap Gwilym is one of the great nature poems because he never owned a house, so it made him a better nature poet. But this is just an aside to give you the back stuff of influences going on there, including the political. And this poem doesn't have anything to do with that. So you can forget that part. We'll move over here. That part is only for what, now when you think about those other poems, if you were to, would give it some feel. Heart. What remains we take to heart, to the place where it will not wither, to the reliable red core, always, always away from weather. As we take the remains, we take ourselves. It follows as surely as the splitting of outer bark and the steady age that seeps inward. The heart stops the simple return to earth, the soil's slow renewal. The heart stops the ravenous beetle, the constant chafing wind, the reaching threads of fungi. To say the heart is a holding place, a vault of oil and heat awaiting resurrection, is to say that within us, where we store the remainder of our lives, in the chest hardened and tough of this gnarled pine knot, is a smoldering memory of fire, too safe, too controlled, to burn.
We're actually going to have one more reader before we break, but at first I want to just thank Paul Jones for reading. I think Paul, I'm fairly certain, at least if it's the first book of poetry I ever read on the web, and is it the first book of poetry ever published on the web, What the Welsh and Chinese Have in Common?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
In fact, it won the North Carolina Writers Contest and luckily sold out so I could put it on the web.
Right, so it's one of the. Paul's been an advocate for relaxing, kind of fighting the tide of stricter and stricter intellectual property laws. His book is available freely through the iBiblio.org website.
I share with you.
And iBiblio.org is hosting the site for this festival. And it's a really great resource of if you have any interests that are not .com and you're trying to expand the world of knowledge and share a collection, iBiblio.org is a good place to go, and it's a free service. Paul's also an instructor of journalism and information science at UNC, and obviously journalism and information science are not enough to cover it for Paul, his poetry as well.